Call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the role, please?
Councilmember Bruce.
Here.
Councilmember Christensen.
Here.
Councilmember Laraway.
Here.
Council President McPherson.
Here.
Mayor Steer.
Here. And if you join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item is the consent agenda. Questions, comments, called for discussion, motion?
I would move we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce.
Aye.
Councilmember Christensen.
Yes.
Councilmember Laraway.
Yes.
Council President McPherson.
Yes.
And that motion carries. We will go right to ACHD presentation on the chip seal schedule. And thank you for doing that, for keeping our roads nice out here. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Lloyd Carnegie. I'm the maintenance manager at ACHD. With me today, I have Rich Shaw, which is our superintendent of Adams, and Heather Friddle, which is superintendent of Cloverdale. They head up our operations that are doing the chip sealing this year. And we're here today to kind of give you guys a brief overview of our chip seal program. If you want to go to the next slide. We'd normally have a chip seal video. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do the size. We weren't able to bring it in on the flash drive in time for you to have it for this meeting. But
can you just act it out?
Sure. So for chip seal, we get a lot of questions of why do we chip seal? So chip sealing provides a maximum return and benefit for the taxpayers of Ada County and helps maintain our very good overall PCI ratings we have here in Ada County. PCI stands for the Pavement Condition Index. This here is called the life cycle curve. As you can tell, we're able to do more chip seal coats to prolong the life of a road compared to a mill and overlay, as a chip seal is about six times the cost of an actual mill and overlay. It only costs 23 cents per square foot for a chip seal, whereas compared to a mill and overlay, which is $1.67 per square foot. So it's a lot cheaper and provides maximum benefit to the taxpayer. We can do roughly six of these seal coats for the price of one mill and overlay. So we can do a lot more lane miles and maintain and prevent that asphalt roadway from deteriorating and falling apart. Next. So this is an overview map of our preventative maintenance strategy that we have with the Ada County Highway District. We break up the whole county into seven zones. And so in each zone, we pick a zone for a year, and we will crack seal every roadway within that zone, and then we will chip seal all the arterials and collectors and 50% of the residentials. So that equates to every arterial and collector roadway being chip sealed once every 7 years, and residentials once every 14 years. And we found this strategy works well, and has actually helped keep our PCI ratings in the very good category by doing this strategy. So our plan this year, again, due to constraints that I'm sure everybody's experiencing with resources and manpower, we are doing one composite chipping crew, which is Adams and Cloverdale combined as one. Normally we have two, but due to lack of our resources, we're having to do it as one combined crew. We have started as of May 31st. We started off with some training, some kind of familiarization with the equipment because we have a lot of new employees. And then our plan is to make sure that we get 100% of our arterials and collectors done and 50% of the residential roadways, focusing mainly on the schools, newly paved roads, and roads that were not chipped sealed the last time we were in this zone. Again, with the limited manpower that we have, we're hoping to get all that we have planned for this year. Next. So our total anticipated cost for the chip seal is $6 million, with it being about 23,000 man hours to accomplish it all. We have 341 lane miles of road, so that equates to 261 lane miles of arterial and collector roadways and 80 lane miles of residential. It'll take about 5,400 tons of liquid asphalt and almost 30,000 tons of aggregate that's going to be placed on the roads this year. So for a quick overview of the process of chip seal, we have our sweeper equipment go through and sweep the roadway from gutter to gutter to ensure that we have a clean surface and for our emulsion to adhere to. If it's not clean, if it has dust or debris, that emulsion can just peel right up, and then we lose that chip seal that we just placed. So it's very crucial that our sweepers are in there cleaning those streets. So the first thing your residents are going to see is street sweepers cleaning those streets. Once it's been cleaned, we'll have our distributor truck, which is at the head of this procession. They will lay out the emulsion, and then our chipper box will follow shortly behind, right at where the emulsion will start to break, and they'll lay down or spread the chip aggregate over top of that emulsion. We have our trucks that follow in behind them that's loading that chipper to keep that procession going. It's very fast moving. And as you can tell from this photo, we do go in the opposite direction of traffic. It's for, there's safety reasons behind it and operation reasons for it. It's easier for our head truck and the flaggers to push that traffic to another lane, as well as when our trucks are finished loading our chipper box, when they pull away, they're actually pulling out in the same direction of traffic, so it's safer for them to pull into traffic. So it's it looks odd because we're going the opposite direction, but it works, and it works for operations and keeps it safe for us and for the public. So after we have chip sealed the road, we usually give about 3 to 5 days for the emulsion to harden and for that chip material to work its way into that emulsion. And then we'll go with our sweepers again to sweep up all the excess chip that's on that mat. And then we'll go in and fog seal it. This fog seal is a very thin coat, again, over top of the chips, just to lock in those chips so we don't have any chip loss, as well as provide an additional seal over top the roadway. We also use this opportunity that a lot of our arterials and collectors, they'll restripe all the line markings, and then if there's areas that they need to add a turn bay or a bike lane, they'll take that opportunity for the fresh canvas to do that kind of stuff. So as we can probably attend, chip seal doesn't just happen overnight. It does take a lot of things to prepare for it. So we're already working back in the beginning of January, going through our chip seal equipment with our fleet department and making sure that we have all the parts we need, that they're ready to go come chip seal season. We have a lot of coordination meetings in-house as well as with our suppliers and other stakeholders such as ITD, Idaho Asphalt, just to make sure that we're doing the right roads and that we're not conflicting with the other projects that are going to be in the area, because there's no point in us chip sealing if they're just going to dig up the road that year or the next year after. It's just kind of a waste of taxpayers' money. So we make sure we have that total coordination. And we had with ITD, because Meridian Road is in part of the areas that we're doing, we have to make sure we coordinate with them for traffic direction as we abut their right-of-way. We have our meetings with Commission and then also the Ada County Sheriff's Office. We have the same presentation as I'm giving you today, because the more that they know, they do receive a lot of phone calls on our behalf of citizens complaining about traffic or why is it slowing down, how come this is being done. So we give them the information. They also know where we're going to be each week so that they can pass that information on to the citizens and help help us keep that flow going. So our schedule, if you want to go back one slide. So again, May 31st was our official start, where we had some refresher training. And again, weather hasn't been our friend so far. We've had a lot of cold mornings. We kind of have to have 60 degrees or warmer. So with the cold weather, it's been slow starts for sure. And then the rain has really, the moisture on the roadway does affect how the emulsion can work. So we've had a very slow start, but we're this week, weather's looking great, so we should be gung-ho this week. We did not chip seal for our Juneteenth holiday. We had a holiday this Monday, so we did not chip seal that
Day. And then for the July 4th holiday week, we also do not plan to chip seal, mainly because there's a lot of programs and events that happen during that July 4th week. And so we recognize that. We don't want to just add this chaos to that event week. So we do not chip seal during that week. We actually take the time to recalibrate our equipment, go over our equipment, plus do other projects that we need to do that we can only do during the summer months. And then we usually have a safety stand down in the middle of that week. Again, it's a good coordination to stop, rethink everything, make sure we're doing what we need to be doing, and then continue on. And our estimated completion is by the end of August. Again, that's weather dependent and how that all goes. Next slide. So we recognize that communication is very key to a successful operation. And so we've actually implemented several new strategies this year. We have a multimedia with print, digital, news outlets, and we're even using radio to get the message out there of what chip seal is, when we're doing it, where we're doing it. We have an interactive map that's on our website that's updated daily, so citizens can go in there, see where the plan is for that week and what we have chip sealed, what we have swept, and what we have fog sealed. And so it's something that they can follow and they can see where we're going and kind of anticipate when we might be in their neighborhood. So it's a very interactive method for people to see where we're at. So this here is a map just kind of showing all the roads that we have planned for this year. The red lines are our arterials and collectors that we'll be putting a 3/8 chip on. And the green is our residentials that we put a 1/4 inch chip material on. We had two additional locations besides this zone 3. We had Shoshone that we chip sealed mainly for. We had a bike lane that we had to adjust and do some line obliterations with. And so we went in there and created that new canvas for our paint crew to redo those lines. And then we also went up and did Bogus Basin this year because it was its cycle for it to be chip sealed as well. So those have both been chip sealed and we're now in the zone 3. And we're working our way from the north, kind of east to west, and then going down south and then west to east. But again, you can follow that on the map, and they can. Anytime anybody has questions, they can call our 6100 number or even send in a TELUS. Okay. So with that, we are open if anybody would love to come out and see the operation, if any of the council members would love to come on our tripper box and be out and see the operation, we welcome you to come out with us. But with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Not a question, but comment. I've watched him do that before, and it's really impressive, the coordination, truck backing mm-hmm. up to the hopper, and the whole deal is it's actually kind of fun to watch because they're very good at it. So,
mm-hmm. I got a question, if I may.
Yeah.
So on that kind of that map of the organization side of it, when you're going to do what, can we expect then an entire, I guess, well, my question would be, how long of a roadway lane do you guys close off? What can the residents expect once you move into the city? Are we looking at square blocks that are going to just be down to one lane? Are we going to look at 100 feet at a time? What's that range?
Sure thing, Mayor Steer, Councilman Christensen. We generally take up one lane at a time. Again, we go in one direction. We will only close down a road for up to maybe 10 to 15 minutes in front of a residential's house. That's how fast the procession actually moves by. This is not like a slurry seal or micro seal where we actually have to hold it off for an hour or two for that emulsion to solidify before anyone can drive on it. As soon as we have laid the emulsion and our chip material is down there, people can drive on it. It helps the material by people driving on it because it reorientates that chip into the emulsion. And so they wouldn't see much disruption. But it's one lane, one direction at a time, and then we come back and do the other lane.
Okay, and are we looking at just one lane of closure then?
Yes.
For that square block?
Yes.
Roughly?
Okay.
Thank you.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Are you going to redo Lender again? I mean, it was just done, theoretically, between the firehouse and Hubbard.
I would have to, I don't know if I can pull up that map any larger. Mine is pretty small.
I couldn't tell by looking at it.
And do you guys read all? Yes.
Well, I tried that. It doesn't.
Oh, there, see? It will.
If Mayor Steer, Councilman Larryway, if it has just been freshly paved, it has been proven that this chip seal being put on freshly paved pavement actually increases the life of that new pavement by several years. So we do try to, as long as it's met its warranty period, and which is 2 years, we can go in there and we will chip seal it, and it will actually provide a longer life for that roadway.
I guess I have a request, if we could turn it down. On the thing between Deer Flat, between Hubbard and Boise, the intersection is kind of confusing. The reason I ask that is if you're going north on Linder at Hubbard, it's basically two lanes wide, but there's no demarcation line for anything other. My question is it possible to make a turn lane there? Because cars double up at the stop signs, and there's no lane there. And there's just one lane, but there's two cars pulling up. And it's kind of confusing sometimes, and I guess if we're not going to enforce the practice, we need to change the policy. And it's the same thing in front of the firehouse on Boise. That road is wide enough, if you're headed south, that literally two cars pull up at the stop sign at the same time. And obviously, hopefully one goes west, but there's really nothing defining any of that. And that was just my curious question.
Mayor Steer, Councilman Larryway, thank you very much. What I'll do is I'll take this information, I'll bring it to our traffic engineering department, and they can go ahead and look at that and see if there's anything they can do at those intersections.
I appreciate it.
Okay, anything further? Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate all the good work you guys do. Our roads are definitely a lot better than we get. Directions, so kudos.
Thank you very much.
For all of that.
Thank you.
All right, and public hearing case number 2001 PUD and 2008-S and 2006 ZC and 2201 V and 20-05 SUP. And 2001DA. Doug.
For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning staff. Staff requests this item be tabled to a date certain of July 5th, 2022.
Okay, I would move we table case number 20-01PUD.
Sorry, as a quick point of clarification, 20-05-SUP special use permit does not need to be part of the motion. That was a leftover from the Planning and Zoning Commission approval.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so just everything else. Okay, case number, I would move we table case number 20-01-PUD, 20-08-S, 20-06-ZC, 22-01V and 20-01DA until the July 5th, 2022 meeting.
I'll second that.
Motion's made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. takes us to business items. Consideration of Danskin reallocation of funds. Paul Stevens.
Mayor and Council, this is Paul. And what's the address here? 740 4th Street. That one, 751 North 4th Street. We would like to move funds from the Ashton Irrigation Pond to the Danskin Pond project because the Ashton Pond, we'd have to put a waste line down ITD's corridor on Meridian Road, and we felt like that would probably take longer than it would take to get the Danskin well on PI pond online. So we felt like it would be better to move that money over so that we could get one project completed, and then hopefully we'll have enough left over to get the engineering part done for the other project. So that's what we'd like to do.
Okay. Questions for Paul?
Nope. Okay. I move we approve the reallocation of funds for the Danskin PI system.
Second that.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Consideration of reallocation of funds from the Pivot Fund to purchase a new mixed liquor pump and two pump rebuild kits. Paul.
Thank you, Mayor. Our wastewater treatment plant is aging. It's 13 years old, and pieces are beginning to break. So we ended up with a surplus. We were under budget because Meta helped us with some old pivots on their farm. We moved them over, and they're working fine. So that money that we had set aside to put pivots in is now available, or a portion of it. And we would like to move a portion of that money to get some pumps and some rebuild kits. And the idea is to get one pump and motor and have that sitting on the shelf, and then have two rebuild kits. So when one fails, we'll have a kit to rebuild it, and we take the pump out, motor out, put the new one in, and then rebuild the old one. So then we're hoping that that way we can beat some of the supply chain issues and do a better job, and also not go out of compliance and keep our plant running properly. Right. And the amounts are in your primer, but the amounts are $91,276 for a pump and motor, and the rebuild kits are $49,229.25. How they get that one, I'm not sure. At any rate, the total is $225,000 that we'd like to move over.
Okay, questions for Paul? I appreciate you doing that, because a pump going down and then not being able to get one or get parts for it is devastating.
Oh, we have to issue duct tape.
Disastrous.
Okay. I would move then we reallocate funds from the Pivot Fund to the purchase of the pump repair as needed.
I second that.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? And that motion carries.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
I think a lot of people will agree if the mixed liquor pump goes down, there's a problem.
I don't think it's the mixed liquor you'd like.
Yeah, I don't drink, so I'm good either way. I just thought it was funny.
Findings and fact, conclusions of law, 2022 comprehensive map plan amendment. Doug Hansen.
Mr. Mayor and council members, for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. The Planning and Zoning Department is concerned the FCOs are not compliant with the Local Land Use Planning Act because they do not include instructions or information on what the applicant, in this case, the city, could do to obtain approval. This is why the FCOs were included as a business item and not a consent item. Based on the deliberations that occurred on the record, staff wanted to provide council with a clear exhibit of what the current future land use map looks like compared to the requested changes. Therefore, additional exhibits have been provided in your packet starting on page 128, showing the existing and proposed comprehensive plan maps and the proposed change in acreages of the land use designations. Staff requests to re-notice the comp plan map designations for a public hearing based upon these concerns before the FCOs are signed in order to obtain approval or receive further instruction for the City Council for an avenue of approval with a future application. I will stand by for questions.
Okay, questions for Doug.
I have a question, Mayor. Yep. So, Doug, last meeting when we looked at and talked about the concerns we had. Are you saying that the mixed-use concerns we had all the way down 10 Mile is something that has to stay due to compliance?
No.
Because it's still in the map, and we had denied that change.
So what I wanted to show was that there was currently existing on the current map that we do have mixed use all the way down 10 Mile, and I just wanted to get on the record if the changes specifically that you would like to see in order for us to obtain approval in the future if the proposed comprehensive plan map amendment is not to your liking.
I guess I'm confused. This wasn't an action item in that we're here to vote on the changes, but with it being a business item and showing the changes implemented.
Councilman Christensen, for the record, Doug Hansen, there haven't been any changes implemented from what you saw at the public hearing 2 weeks ago and tonight. This is just a clear exhibit showing what the City of Kuna proposed future land use map looks like versus the current future land use map that is currently adopted.
Okay.
And then I just wanted to provide the changes in acreages of land use designations between the two.
Information. Mm-hmm. I got you. Okay.
And for the record, I was one of the ones that had an issue with it at the last meeting, but I came in and got an hour and a half educational lesson from the Planning and Zoning Department and the Economics Director, so I'm good with it.
Sorry, Mark Bybee, City Attorney. Just to offer some clarification, because this was a public hearing item the last time, what Doug's asking for tonight is you're either approving the FCOs like as written, or you're saying, based on realizing, like, Doug saying he's concerned the FCOs are not what they need to be. You're either approving them with that issue or setting it for further public hearing, because Doug's hoping to clear up some of these issues, and that would have to happen in a public hearing. You can't make the changes now. Does that make sense?
And so the direction that you need is for us to approve to just give you direction to go ahead and republish and set up a public hearing to hear the matter again, correct?
For the record, Doug Hansen, Planning and Zoning, that is correct.
Mayor, can I ask a question?
Yes.
This may not be suited then for this, but more suited for the public hearing, and if that's the case, I'm happy to just hold off on any answer. But have you received insight from any contractors, developers, or builders that already have a vested interest in certain corridors that want to see the changes and have come to you for those changes?
That is a public, for the record, Doug Hansen, Kuna Planning and Zoning Staff, that's a public hearing question.
Nothing over there?
No.
Okay. I think we can make a motion to send it back to a public hearing.
Yeah. Okay, I would move then that we direct Planning and Zoning to republish the public hearing and for the 2022 comprehensive plan, and we'll see it again.
Second. Motion's made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Case number 2203LS, Idaho Power Hawk Substation. Idaho Power Company requests approval to split an approximately 106.8-acre parcel into two parcels in order to facilitate a future Idaho Power substation. The future substation parcel is proposed to be approximately 3.11 acres, and the remaining parcel is proposed to be approximately 103.96 acres. The subject site is located at West Cunamore Road. And Doug Hansen.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. The application before you this evening requests approval to split an approximately 106-acre parcel into two parcels in order to facilitate a future Idaho Power substation. The future substation parcel is proposed to be approximately 3 acres. The remaining parcel is proposed to be approximately 103 acres. The subject site is located specifically at the northwest corner of Cunamora and Cloverdale Road. Should the lot split be approved this evening, Idaho Power will be required to return for a special use permit and design review approval from the Planning and Zoning Commission for the substation. Staff has determined that the application is compliant with CUNA City Code and Idaho Code. If the council approves this application, staff recommends that the applicant be subject to the conditions of approval listed in the staff memo. With that, I will stand by for any questions.
Okay, questions for Doug?
Okay, then I would move we approve case number 2203LS.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve case number 22-03-LS. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Consideration to approve R45-2022 ADP contract for architectural services, Bobby Withrow.
I think
Chris is going to do it.
Okay. I'm going to talk for Bobby because he left his voice at home. This is for the CUNA Police Station. The council had allocated $300,000 to potentially do a remodel on that facility. However, there's been a lot of issues such as asbestos, trusses for the roof that really aren't trusses. The integrity in the structure is just really not salvageable. So in lieu of that, the consideration is to have an architect do new plans. Been working with the chief on this, and Bobby, we have the team working on it together. And it's under $50,000, so we did not have to do an RFI. And we had Mark look at the contract to make sure we're compliant with that. And then we would like to use part of that $300,000 to pay for this contract. And then once this is done, once the architecture is done, it's similar to the engineering that we get, where we're going to have a pretty good idea of what it's going to cost to do the structure. And for that, stand for any questions, and Mike's able to answer questions, and Bobby can nod or shake his head.
All right. Questions?
I mean, it's for PD. They're all right, aren't they? They're tough.
And they're fine-ish.
I think a large tent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mayor, City Council, yeah. if I may, to touch on what Chris is saying. Oh, excuse me. For the record, Mike Fortusco, City of CUNA Police Department, 1450 West Boise Street, CUNA, Idaho. On top of the asbestos issue, there was lead paint. The floor was sinking in and was being held up by fence posts. So there was so many issues with that building that, like Chris touched on, that it was not a safe place actually to house us. Yes, we are tough, Council President, but some of us aren't as tough or young anymore. So.
Plus a little asbestos between friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Chief.
I would move we approve R45-2022 ADP, Contract for Architectural Services.
I'll second that.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that That motion carries. Brings us to budget workshop discussion. Jared Impey.
Mayor and Council, thank you for this time that we can discuss the upcoming budget for fiscal 2023. In your packet, beginning on page 170, is the beginning of the discussion items. So I think I wanted to start by kind of going over where I project our fund balance to be at the end of this year for each fund. So as you can see, we'll have a strong fund balance for each fund, especially that general fund. The general fund will be especially helped by development income as part of the Meta build out, as well as others. That's expected to happen in approximately August, with the final payment occurring approximately in September. So that's the reason for that big jump up in the general fund. The latecomer fund should look positive based on different reimbursements that we have outstanding. The water fund should continue to look good. Same with all the other enterprise funds, the sewer and the irrigation. The solid waste fund, if you're unaware, is essentially a pass-through fund. So basically, we collect on behalf of J&M Sanitation, and as part of that, we receive a franchise fee. And so historically, that fund is has kind of a low fund balance. And then the capital projects fund, we're trying to kind of start over with that one so that we don't have as many remaining projects in there. So that's why that fund is kind of drawn down, with any remaining balance transferring back over to the general fund. And then park impact and police impact funds, they're both projected to look good at the end of this fiscal year. And for any details that you want to see on this, I've provided those detail pages in the pages that follow. However, I think for this initial discussion, I think it's important to kind of look big picture so that we can kind of see kind of where we stand overall. However, when we look at this this fiscal year, the next item that we see is kind of some income statement items. So we first looked at the balance sheet, and the balance sheet, I think, looks really good. However, there's some kind of mixed results that we're seeing on the P&L side. So as you can see, the general fund building permits. So far, we're down about 18% this year. Overall, with regards to development income, we're down about anywhere from 15 to 18%. Sales tax that we receive as part of the sharing with the state is actually up 29%, so a little bit disparity there. You'd expect that when one goes down, the other would go down as well. However, we're actually kind of seeing the opposite. As well as the liquor distribution sharing with the state, we actually see an increase in that. So kind of interesting results that you can see there, that building permits down. However, sales tax and liquor distribution are up. And I think most of that has to do with the discussion that we're going to have regarding the current economic activity in the preceding pages, where you see that inflation, so CPI, is at 8.6 nationally as compared from May to May. The producer price index is up 10.8. So essentially that explains why sales tax is up, because even if people are starting to reduce some of their discretionary spending, their non-discretionary spending, in other words, food, transportation, things like that, have gone up in value. And they can't avoid it. And so that's why I think that the sales tax number is up, even though building permit is down. Same with liquor distribution. That one's up for part of the same reason. Then one item that we're beginning to see as making a significant impact is the Federal Reserve has begun to raise interest rates. So in May, we saw a 50 basis point increase. The other day, we saw a 75%, a 75 point basis point increase. And then from what I understand, there's expected to be three more rate increases. And so for now, we have kind of a range of 1.5 to 1.75 for a Fed funds rate, and it's expected to go up to 3.4. That said, if you look at current mortgage rates, a 30-year rate right now is sitting at about 6%, whereas a few years ago you saw it at 3%. So I think a large part in why building permit revenue is down, aside from any supply chain issues, is just that interest rates have gone up, which makes it a lot less affordable. So, and surprisingly, when interest rates have gone up, it hasn't brought the price down that much. And so it's kind of a double effect there. And as I put in item G here, like I said, the increase in mortgage rates really affects adjustable rate mortgages, where you may see, you know, a big tick up after a time period, which we would definitely see a change in any revenue that we'd see from sales tax or whatever. So I think that all of these factors combined are kind of pointing towards recession for especially later in the year. Some people say that we're already there, but I'll wait for the powers that be to officially state that. But in Q1, we had negative 1.4% growth as a nation, and they've revised their estimates down to potentially 0.0 for Q2. So what that bodes is it's a technical recession. And what we're currently seeing now is a bear stock market, which means that essentially Wall Street is expecting a recession based on the factors that we described up here. And on top of that, 2022 is a midterm election year, which if there is a recession, the reason that that even comes into play here is because that would affect the possibility of a stimulus program to be able to shorten the length of time that a recession would ensue. So I think all of these factors combined kind of make it so that we have to be more conservative in our estimates. We have to be more conservative in our expectations, whereas in the past, we could always, at least in the last few years, we could kind of expect the growth would kind of happen regardless of what we did. However, I think going forward, we have to kind of temper some of our expectations because there may be some factors that we can't control or that may be providing additional pressure downward. And so are there any questions so far, Councilman?
Nope.
I just don't want to move ahead if you had any burning questions. So I don't have a crystal ball, by the way, but I try to understand kind of where things are going. So for fiscal 23, I kind of tried to lay out based on these projections that I provided in the ensuing pages, kind of where we expect things to be on a cash-to-cash basis. So as you can see, most of the funds are cash positive or expected to be. The one fund that is particularly affected by recessionary pressures is the general fund. You wouldn't think so because it's largely funded by property taxes. However, there's the two items that we discussed earlier, sales tax and building permit revenue, are largely a factor that funds the general fund. And so when there is a recession, we do expect there to be pressure on the general fund. And so with that, kind of what I'm building into my projections is, this year we've seen revenue decline about 18%. Next year I'd expect that to at least be 15% more, just because of the the pressures that we're seeing in the overall market and wanting to be conservative with our estimates. So, however, I think that we have some measures to kind of bridge some of these gaps. So some of the items that we'd received from like Meta, I think would help bridge that gap, and carryover that we've accumulated over prior years. So despite there being a little bit of a projected shortfall in the general fund, I think that we can still bridge that gap so that we'd have sufficient cash flow to cover any of those expenses. So I think that we can manage that as well. In the latecomer fund, that's showing a negative. So the reason for that is because we're expecting some reimbursements to go through next year. I think that those can still be made. We have a large carryover in the latecomer fund. In addition, the reimbursement program that you approved today for the 10 Mile Force Main project, that can be covered by ARPA funds. So if you recall, we received a pledge of about $2.3 million last year, and we should receive $2.3 million this year for ARPA funds. So those are funds that are used for infrastructure expansion or significant maintenance programs. And so that would be able to alleviate a lot of pressure off the latecomer fund, and I think that that would be the way that we kind of bridge that gap there. Then the water fund, the reason that that one would see a large uptick is that there's kind of been quite a few capital projects that have been delayed for one reason or another, and so that fund may see some additional expense strictly for that reason. However, historically, I think that the water fund has a quite large carryover in fund balance, so I think we'll be good there. And then the sewer fund, thankfully, is projected to still be cash positive, as well as the irrigation fund. So I think that we're overall in a good position, cash flow-wise. Obviously, if the economy completely falls off a cliff, we'd have to take extraordinary measures. However, we're currently planning for a recession that would look more like 2001, 2002, rather than 1929. So I think we're in a good position overall as a city. However, with inflation so high, we want to make sure that our employees can still afford to live here and that we're continuing to maintain control of our fund balances. And so the COLA that we had calculated came out to 8.35. So the reason for the discrepancy between the 8.6 and the 8.35 is that the 8.35 is the CPI for the Western states specifically, as opposed to the nation as a whole. Because certain areas of the country have experienced greater inflation than others. For instance, Phoenix has had really, really high inflation, and we've just had really high inflation. So those Phoenix numbers kind of skew the average a little bit. So
really and really, really.
Yeah. So when you're having 40-year high inflation, what's a few percentage points, right? So, but as part of that, I think that we're still in line with kind of what other cities are doing. From what I understand, other cities such as Meridian and Boise are looking at numbers similar to these for a COLA. Obviously, this is something that we'd be open for discussion. However, I just wanted to bring that number to the council's attention. And the numbers that we've provided in the packets as projections are including that 8.35 number. And then as part of this, we also have several employees that are part of this, of these projections. And as part of our assumptions for next fiscal year, all new employees and new hires will be subject to review. Obviously, we don't want to bring on any employees that we feel will have to be let go later, so we want to justify all new hire positions so that we are operating effectively, and we're doing right by the citizens. So as part of that, a few items that would need to be discussed would be property tax. So with that property tax, in the past, we'd had discussions of a 3% increase, taking that, and then a maximum of 8%. So this is a change from what we had in the past due to House Bill 389 that passed in 2020 and had its first year of enactment in 2021. I think that it's important for a city of our size to continue to take the maximum amount possible. The reason being is because due to House Bill 389, we've already gone without $441,000 in revenue, which is about 10% of our overall levy. So House Bill 389 is starting to have an effect as part of the legislation that was passed, and I think it's important that we, in order to maintain a constant level of service, that we take the full amount that we're eligible for. Then, as part of simply the cost of maintaining service, I think that we'd be requesting water to have a 4.9% COLA, sewer 4.9% COLA. We haven't quite decided on PI. However, depending on a few items that we kind of have outstanding, I'd kind of like to see that one kind of stay where it is, since that last year we had kind of a large increase. And then I've also invited Chad Gordon to kind of discuss the trash services for the upcoming year. However, before I kind of turn it over to him, I kind of wanted to see if the council or mayor had any questions that we could answer before continuing on.
Questions for Jared?
No. That was a mouthful. Thank you.
No, you make it simple to understand, so I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, I'll turn it over to Chad.
Green means go, all right. For the record, Mayor and Council Members, Chad Gordon, J&M Sanitation, 680 Swan Falls Road here in CUNA. As Jared explained, obviously, you know, we've seen a lot of increases in a lot of different areas, and he pulled the, you know, the average of 8.35. With that said, we're looking for a rate increase of 4.99%, trying to help, obviously, the citizens of the, you know, city maintain what they have to deal with, as well as us maintaining our services at the level we've been able to maintain them. We've seen phenomenal increases, obviously, in one of the big, large items being fuel. It's all the way up to, I think last time I checked, $5.76 a gallon.
Fuel went up?
Yeah, fuel went up. It's amazing. I don't know why that happened or when it happened. I mean, so that is another good point. With the advent of us buying the electric trucks, that has helped us to keep that cost down. They come at a very high price, but overall, the long-term goal with those is to help to maintain these, you know, rate increases at a reasonable amount that is, you know, easy for the citizens to be able to keep maintaining their lifestyles. We are looking to adding two more electric trucks minimum to the fleet by the end of the year, beginning of next year. If we can do that, that will allow us to collect all of the residential trash and recycling in the city of CUNA with 100% electric vehicles. That will help us to maintain for a long time, especially with those fluctuating fuel prices. Idaho Power is really good about keeping their prices pretty level. For the most part, all throughout the year. So for budgetary reasons, it makes it a lot easier for us to budget and say, look, here's what our costs are going to be to fuel these trucks. The other thing that we've seen a huge increase in is just wages, cost of living for our employees. We have a really great team of employees right now that provide the highest level of service that we could, you know, ask for the city. And in order to do that, we kind of got to make sure that they can live too. We've seen increases in all categories ranging anywhere from 8 to 25%. Containers have gone up, you know, considerably because of the plastics issues and the resin plants and so on and so forth. So we've seen a lot of different increases in a lot of different places. Looking at that national average or the Western average of the 8.36, we felt like, you know, 4.99 was a place to be to try to, you know, alleviate some of the other woes that our citizens are seeing. Does anybody have any questions or concerns?
I guess I have one question. How's your electric trucks working?
They are working phenomenally. Right now, we've had them in service for 15 months, and they are, both trucks are doing 5 days a week. They are doing about 800 homes a day on average, anywhere between 1,000 and 1,400 lifts of the arm, traveling 35 miles total. They're coming back with anywhere between 20 and 40% battery capacity at the end of the day, so they're just doing charging at night. And then not having to do any opportunity charging throughout the day. Being brand new, our maintenance costs are down on them in comparison to an older diesel truck, and the drivers love them. We actually, the manufacturers of the truck, the chassis, asked us to come to Las Vegas for Waste Expo this year, so they transported our truck down there, put it in their booth, and had us come down and pretty basically sit in their booth with them and explain what our experience was. Waste Expo is a lot of large manufacturers like Mack and Peterbilt, and every one of them has a brand new truck that's never seen the street. So a lot of guys were very interested to see a truck that had actually been out on the street collecting trash, and their first impression when they walked in was generally, wait a sec, this truck's been used. And then they would, you know, ask us, and when they found out that we were the owners of the truck, they got really interested because it wasn't just a salesman wanting to pitch them, you know, a sale on a pick on a truck. We had nothing to gain from it. We just wanted to share our experience and let people know that it can be done. So from our perspective, it has been a super successful program. Again, we were the first in the state of Idaho to have them. And if we implement two more trucks to cover our other trash and recycling routes, we will be the first in the United States, if not the world, to have a city that has completely had their residential trash and recycling services covered by 100% electric vehicles.
Awesome.
So the two trucks you're talking about adding at the end of the year are electric?
Yes, they'll be 100% electric. If Dad had his druthers, everything that we had on that site would be 100% electric, but it hasn't quite gotten there to work for transfer trailers and everything else. So we are working towards that, and obviously, you know, with people like us buying the technology, it's advancing it on a daily basis. Since we bought the trucks 15 months ago, they were 295 kilowatts of battery capacity, the ones that we purchased. The new ones will be 405 kilowatts of battery capacity, which is going to allow me to hopefully be able to run the recycling route, because the recycling truck has to go into Boise to empty the recycling at the facility there in Boise. So it's a longer distance traveled on a weekly basis than our regular residential trucks that come back to the transfer station at our site. So again, in 15 months, we've seen a 35% increase in their technology just on the battery side. And they're talking another 20 to 25% in the next 2 years. So it's something that's definitely viable. CUNA is one, you know, in our situation where we operate in such a small radius and it's all condensed, works out perfect for these. And we've been able to prove that it is workable in certain situations, which has gotten a lot of people excited about it.
Thank you, Chuck.
Yep.
You thought it was funny to see the kid take out the trash when he heard the trash truck regularly? He's only got a few seconds when he hears this one.
Yeah.
He's burning through the house.
Cams rattling.
He's burning through the house.
That's the only complaint we've gotten so far, is that they can't hear us coming down the road to drag the trash out at the last minute on trash day. So
can you retrofit your trucks with, like, the ice cream truck?
We did think about that. My only concern is kids love the garbage truck already a lot as it is, and our drivers have to take a little extra time a lot of times to keep them away from the truck because of the dangers of it. So I didn't necessarily want to precipitate that any more than what we're already seeing. But we have thought about it. We've talked to the manufacturer about it. They're kicking around a couple different ideas. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chad.
Thanks.
They yell at me every week to get away from the truck.
I'm sure.
All right.
So, Council, with that... discussion. Is there anything else that you'd like to see as part of our tentative budget that we'll be having next month, or any additional information that you'd like to receive prior to that first kind of deliberative discussion in which you'd actually make a decision?
So we have a planning period where we go over all that, or is it, how does it?
So in
how does the budget cycle work?
So in general, what we have is we have this first budget workshop where we kind of go over our first estimates. Then we have a tentative budget that's passed in July, where essentially that is kind of the plan solidified, and then we then send that out to the public for a final budget hearing that we'll have in August. And so
then we move some of the money from the what we were using for the skate park. I think that was at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
When would be the part to discuss adding that back in, or making sure we have some of that allocated back to that project?
Yeah, so that would be something that we could discuss. We could discuss at any time. Probably the best time would be to discuss that prior to the tentative budget, so that we'd have time to make those numbers work out. I will say that the hard part with making changes is that the general fund is so stressed for next fiscal year that if we want something, we have to give something up. And so,
okay.
And so
I think that's what we did when we allocated it back to something else at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, so when we decided to purchase the park shop, we decided to take away from the skate park. You're correct, Councilman. And so which page is it? It's the page that has all the fine print projects on it. So on that page, you can see all the projects where it's discussed exactly which ones are the capital projects that we'd be looking at next year. And to your point, I had actually taken off the skate park upgrade just so that the numbers would pencil out for next fiscal year, since I'm expecting a dip in funds. But if there's anything that we would like to move around, or different priorities that the council might have, we can always discuss those and kind of move the numbers around to see exactly where we can find money for that.
I'll just look through it and circle back with you.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you, though. You always do great work.
Okay. Anything further? All right. Awesome. Yes. Thank you, Jared, very much. Consideration to approve ordinance 2022-18, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Cuna making certain findings and enlarging the boundaries of the Cuna Municipal Irrigation System by the inclusion of Ada County Assessor's City of Cuna and declaring water rights of pertinent thereto are pooled for delivery purposes, and directing the city clerk to record this ordinance as provided by law, and directing the city engineer to provide notice of this ordinance to the New York Irrigation District, the owners, and update the irrigation system map, and providing an effective date.
Another one of these. I would move we waive three readings of ordinance 2022-18.
Second that.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2022-18.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the ordinance. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Councilmember Larraway?
Yes.
Council President McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance 2022-19, a municipal annexation and zoning ordinance of the City Council of the City of Cuna, making certain findings and declaration of authority and annexing certain real properties, to wit, Ada County Assessors parcel numbers R54626801000, owned by Markovitz Donald J, and S14282230500, owned by Boise Basin Development LLC, within unincorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the City of Cuna, into the City of Cuna, Idaho, and establishing the zoning classifications of said real properties, and directing the city engineer and the city clerk, and providing an effective date.
I would move we waive three readings of ordinance 2022-19.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
I would move we approve ordinance 2022-19.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the ordinance. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Councilmember Larraway?
Yes.
Council President McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. And that is what we had on the agenda for tonight. The school board was too busy to meet with us on the 29th, apparently, so they wanted to reschedule, so now they're talking about 3 months away from now.
No, I think actually I'll be out of town, and so will my wife, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dodge that bullet.
So anyway, we'll work on getting you some dates to look out to reschedule that. And then in regards to the letter we got from the school district asking for a reconsideration, that was actually kind of sent early because the decision hadn't been made until now. So we will contact the school board, and they will ask them if they want to amend anything on there, run it as is. And then the process for that would be that it comes to council to find out if you wish to hear a reconsideration. And then it would have to go to, well, I guess there's actually another, I'll let Mark explain from there.
And keep it simple. All
right. So Mark Bybee, city attorney. The process in state code is not clearly defined for like what you must do to process a reconsideration. On this type of application, they're entitled to make the request. But once it comes in, the state code doesn't say, oh, you give them a public hearing, or you do it as a business item, or, you know, it's none of that. City code doesn't have anything in it either. I think that, you know, gives us a reason, looking at it as staff, to maybe come forward with an ordinance at some point to define reconsideration process in code. And so when this comes on to the agenda, it's going to really come on to the agenda as an item, you know, for, because it does say in state code, you as the city council will come on there and you're going to make the decision, do you want any further process on this? If you decide don't even vote or put it on the agenda and want to put it on a future agenda for any further process, state code says if you take no action, which that's what would happen if you didn't do anything at the next meeting or instruct us to do anything as staff, if you do no action, it'll just be deemed denied in 60 days. Like, that's what would happen by operation of state law. That's kind of in there as a built-in safety valve for cities that just ignore reconsideration so that there is some finality once the requests are made. But essentially, it'll be on the agenda as a business item for you to set it for further process in the future. That might be a public hearing, or that might just be an opportunity for them to submit written, like, legal arguments as to why you should adjust your findings. And when I say them, I'd say the applicant as well as the party seeking reconsideration. And that would, so seeking legal, getting legal argument based on the record as is different than opening it for another public hearing. Another public hearing is, you know, let's submit new reports, let's submit new facts, different than just legal argument. So I think when that comes on the agenda, as, you know, a business item, and I'll refresh your memory then, is I'm going to be asking, do we want to put this on for public hearing or just allow the applicant, or really one, do we want to do anything else? And if you don't make, if you don't want to, then it just no action and it will be denied in 60 days. If you want to do something else, the motion is, in my mind, either going to be a motion to set it for a public hearing or just a motion saying, let's put this on as a future business item and afford the applicant, the school district, to submit legal argument as to why changes should be made and suggest what those changes should be. And when I say changes should be made or what they should be, I'm talking about specifically changes to the FCOs that got entered tonight. That's what would be getting changed through a reconsideration. I don't know if I made sense or I just sounded like a lawyer there, but I'm hoping it made some sense.
It did.
Yeah.
I guess after reading the letter we received, it tainted us as doing something inappropriate or illegal. That's what I got from it, that we did not follow a procedure. I guess what I want to know is we did or we didn't.
And I think that would be a reason, you know, towards saying let's put this on either for one, just getting some legal argument from the school district and the applicant about that subject, or even putting on for public hearing so you can get some factual information about that maybe, as well as legal argument, because a public hearing would afford more factual information, and they can still make legal argument in a public hearing. Whereas if you don't put on public hearing, they can just present some kind of legal argument. And so that's what I think we had, you know, in the reconsideration, beginning to you said this, you know, what did we do?
You know? So is this letter something that could be reoccurring every time we make an approval?
On certain types of approvals, yes. So affected parties in LUPA decisions, which is different. We talked about this before. Annexations are not LUPA decisions. Zoning designations are, and that's how we end up under LUPA here. So the application that the reconsideration was submitted for was a LUPA decision. It did include an annexation, but also included a zoning designation. And so on those affected parties, which I mean, maybe there's an argument you could say the school district isn't, but I don't think that'd be a great argument, so I don't want to do that. So I think they probably are an affected person or party as defined in state law, and so they'd have rights to request reconsideration. And so if that's, I guess, it gets back to that whole thing about what does the process look like, since it's not defined in state code and we haven't put it in city code. It's certainly, if we're going to start getting influx of multiple reconsideration requests, it's a reason to define the process so we're not defining it every time it happens.
And then, so as I recall, there wasn't anybody that testified against that. The school district was neutral. Right. The neighbors were happy with it. It was a good decision based on the testimony, the way it was given. So,
they provided a letter, right?
Yeah.
But they just took a neutral position?
Took a neutral position. So, either way. But I think, in my mind, I think it's something that we need to probably go ahead and review whether you want to do it like a business item or a public hearing. Do you think a business item is sufficient? Or would you rather do a public hearing? I think it's one of those things we're going to have to put to bed. So
it's not on the agenda now, so I don't want to say what you should do. Here's the thing, too, is like I'm cognizant as a city attorney. I can explain legal advice to you and options, and I really struggle some if I don't know if there's necessarily a – if both are legal and there's not necessarily truly a best, I don't want to interject my judgment over the council's judgment on, you know, what to do. And so that's what I try and be careful of. And so I think both are suitable, and it's really what the council wants to do.
Well, I think in my mind we're sufficient to do.
We're not making that decision tonight anyways.
I think in my mind we're sufficient to do that with a business items. But we can figure that out later. Anyway, something for you to consider. That's all I have.
I do think it's a good idea, like you said, to define the process. That way, you know.
Right.
Down the road, that way it's done.
In the future, absolutely. I'd say we need to do that. And city staff is working on amendments to the development, like the city's zoning and subdivision ordinances right now. And it's a long time coming. It's a big project. Doug has finished some review. Our office is now doing review. And that will likely be part of that. But I guess there's a bit of, you know, procedure on making ordinance changes. Even if we put in the policy right or the code right now before the hearing happened, we couldn't bind them, the applicant or the school district, to follow that procedure just because it wasn't. You can't, like, pass an ordinance after an application and says, ha, now you have to follow the ordinance. It's got to be in place first. So I think this instructs, you know, and informs, hey, we don't have that in code now, we should, because if we keep getting more of these, we need to define process. And I'll tell you, it's not just City of Kuna. We've seen this. Ketchum is a really good example. We represent the City of Ketchum, our office does, and we've had a very complicated reconsideration process on a hotel project up there. And again, it kind of goes to, without it defined in code, it's made it even harder. And so we've seen this elsewhere, and it's just something when it comes to your attention, it's, you know, time to act and make improvements moving forward.
Okay. That's all I had for the evening. Anything from anyone else?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.